an update on the Yasukuni Shrine graffiti situation. The original one happened about a month ago. Nothing really came of it. The guy who did the graffiti, he wrote toilet on it. He said this was a political message about Fukushima power plant and how that Japan is treating the world like its toilet. So therefore, he was going to take this shrine and treat that like a toilet. So he wrote toilet on it, and then he peed on it. That was all done on video. Well, this week, it's been about 3-4 weeks since that initial event had occurred, Yasukuni Shrine was vandalized again. And the political message this time was dog, toilet, poo, and militarism go to hell. So I think the toilet message is now going to be a through line. Anyone who goes to vandalize any of these like sort of sacred areas, that I understand the controversy. People are going to just... I'm just wondering if everyone who vandalizes it from now in the future, now that this is now a copycat thing and it's now a thing, are they all going to put something toilet poop / related on it? And then their message, the message that militarism go to hell, I'm actually kind of on board with that. And it is a far more appropriate and sensible statement compared to the first one. So like, I don't agree with the vandalism. Let's be clear about that. But the first one, the message of I'm angry about Fukushima, so I'm going to take this shrine that has militaristic connections and write toilet on it, that connection isn't that strong. That's the problem. So I think really the guy wanted to deface that shrine. It's famous and Chinese and Korean people are angry about it. I understand the controversy. It's very serious. But the connection isn't there. Fukushima and this, the relationship isn't quite right. This one, dog, toilet, poo. Yeah, poo, not poop. It's very important to be accurate in our statements. Not poop. Poo. Dog, toilet, poo. That bit, I would say, is a bit extraneous. Militarism go to hell makes perfect sense to put on Yasukuni Shrine. It was the holiday. So the holiday, there's a lot of people out having a good time. There's a lot of tourism, but it means a lot of Japanese people are off. Everything's very busy. I spent the last 2 weeks on my holiday basically staying inside and cleaning my house. It was so hot outside. I did not want to go outside. My family didn't want to go outside. We just didn't want to do anything. We just decided to stay home. It was a very good holiday. It was actually relaxing, which is really nice. Not everyone has the same thing. Some people, they want to get out, and on August 14th, they're out, they're partying, they're having a good time. Two men tried to climb up onto the sign outside of a Family Mart. One guy boosted his friend, and then his friend from the sign was able to get onto this like outcropping roof of the Family Mart, and he's up there. People, his friends are filming him, going like, hey, haha, you're doing something you know is bad. A bunch of people are saying like, this isn't cool. Some people are laughing. Some people are saying this is bad. Then the staff come out and they're like, hey, get down from there. And when he doesn't get down from there, they of course go and call the police. His friends are like, hey, police are coming. We should maybe abscond. They didn't know that word. We should maybe run away. The guy did not get down fast enough. The police show up. They bring him down and then they give him a verbal warning and they let him go. And I don't... So this, it's a dual-edged sword. I mean, every sword is a dual-edged sword, really. I guess not. That's a dumb tangent I just went on in my head. Like, is every sword a double-edged sword? No, there's lots of single-edged swords. That's not the point. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about foreigners' behavior and the police. And the question is, should the police be stricter or more kind with foreigners the way they behave in Japan? I don't have a good answer. This is actually really tough because you want to encourage tourism, but they are having a lot of problems with tourism because tourists are not following the cultural norms or rules of Japan. They keep doing things like this. Like, I actually don't think this is normal back wherever these guys came from. They didn't say their nationality, but they just said foreigner. That's enough. Climbing onto buildings, I don't think is okay anywhere. If there is a place there, it's okay, culturally speaking. Please let me know. I would actually be really interested in that. But I don't think that's a normal, common thing. So he knew he was doing a bad thing. The police, what should they have done? So they don't say if these are permanent residents or they're on a visa or they're on a holiday or whatever. So that's really the question I would have more than anything else is, are these guys residents? And I have this weird thing where I think residents should get treated more harshly than tourists. Tourists should get warned maybe once or twice, and then if they get in trouble a third time, deport them. It's fine. If you have committed to living here and yet you flaunt the rules, I feel like you should be dealt with like a Japanese person, which I feel would be more harsh. I'm not sure. I think there's, again, it would depend on the police officer. Some police would be like more harsh with foreigners and some would be more forgiving and vice versa. Like that's just, I think, the case, because these are people who have to make interpretations on the moment. But online, there is a new term that has come up. It is Meiwaku Gaigokujin. So Gaigokujin is foreigner and Meiwaku is nuisance. And that is the foreigners coming, doing whatever they want, getting away with it. And I think, so just went into my head was the when Logan Paul came to Japan, he went to the suicide forest and found a body and he videoed all this. And just, I didn't watch all that stuff. I saw this like sort of essentially highlight clips. And it was a lawyer talking about how many crimes he had actually committed over the course of the like 5 minutes of highlight videos that we saw. And it was numerous, and yet the guy didn't get in trouble. And I think that's it. Well, I think when, maybe this is my opinion. I haven't formulated my opinion strongly, so that's why I have to be a little careful with what I say, because I might actually talk myself through and come out on the other end with a different opinion. If the nuisance is purposeful, I think the police should treat it in a purposeful way. So I'm climbing on a building I know I'm not supposed to climb on. I'm causing problems that I know I'm not supposed to do. That should be treated harshly. If someone wanders into a building site where they're not supposed to be and is genuinely confused and just doesn't know where they are, I don't think that should be treated harshly at all. That, I think I've hit on it. I think this is where intent becomes the factor as to how they should be dealt with. So since this guy purposefully climbed up there, knew he was doing a bad thing, they were filming it, probably going to put it on social media, I think he should have been dealt with more harshly. I think this is a case where this guy should have been treated more harshly. I'm thinking back to the Johnny Somali. Johnny Somali pushed these boundaries again and again and again, and he got arrested and he got held, but he never actually got in any real trouble. I think they should have deported him right away. Like after the first or second time he got in trouble, just deport the guy because he was doing it on purpose. Whereas if it was a guy live streaming and he's done some things by accident and maybe caused some problems, but he didn't do it on purpose, it'd be like, hey, don't do that again. And then we're fine. A woman got arrested for throwing eggs at her neighbor's house. They cited 2 days specifically because they had video footage of the events happening on those days. So those were the specific ones. The surveillance cameras show her throwing eggs sort of sniper style from her window. So you can see the window open and you can see her huck an egg out at the other house. And she would throw 2 or 3 at a time. And according to the neighbor, the person who actually lived in the house that was getting egged, this happened every day. And she threw 5 or 6 eggs every day. So she seemed to take like 1 or 2 shots at a time, close the window, wait 40 minutes, open the window, shoot 2 or 3 eggs. And again, my mind stopped right there. There's more to this story about, you know, what the fallout and what. But 5 eggs, 6 eggs every day. So she's using a carton of eggs, dozen eggs, every 2 days. You're paying for that. She's paying for the eggs she's throwing at the house next door. She's going through an insane amount of eggs. During the pandemic, there was this story that we did, and it was how the price of eggs had gone up so much. And I was like, this story seems to say that over this entire period, she was throwing eggs. So even when eggs got like oppressively expensive in Japan, she was still buying a dozen eggs and using them over the course of 2 days, not for nutrition, but to throw at her neighbor's house. The neighbor said at times it was 20 eggs. I haven't done anything to her. She started throwing eggs at my balcony around December 2019. It has been happening regularly since. So she's implying that it's happening this whole time. She's probably complained. She's tried to talk to them. She's talked to something else. She talked to the police, but there's been no real proof. There's just a ton of eggs. They have pictures around the house where there's just like literally eggshells and egg yolk and just egg everywhere. And then the reporter who's going up to this house is like, you can smell the house from here. The other secondary part of this though, the woman who's throwing the eggs has to live next to the house that smells of rotten eggs. She's the one who's actually living. She's like punishing herself in a way. They've been neighbors for about 20 years. So 2019, we're talking what, 5 years in the past. That's how long this has been reported for. This is her second arrest for this. She was arrested 3 years ago for the exact same thing. So this is a question. So throwing eggs at a house, form of vandalism. going to get in trouble, maybe get a fine. Maybe since it's the second arrest, you might get a little bit of jail time, but it's not going to be significant. She's going to go back to that house and then she's going to continue the behavior. We kind of know this. So how do you stop this from happening? Like, should you be able to force this woman to move? I got a lot of questions this episode that I don't have answers to. And it seems like she should bear the burden. She's the one causing the problem. She's throwing the egg. She's committing vandalism. She's attacking the neighbor. She should bear the financial responsibility of cleaning up, first things first. Then I would actually say if she commits the crime again or she continues, I think they should force her to move somewhere else. Like, I'm not saying cost her extra money, like put her house up for sale, whatever that house goes for, put that money into the next house where she has to move to. They've lived next to each other for 20 years. And it seems like at the beginning, there was no real problem. And then it sort of developed over time. When the neighbor says, I haven't done anything to her, I don't know if I fully believe that. Like, as much as this conflict seems to be one-sided, I don't know if I honestly believe that you did nothing. Or maybe the fact that you ignored her and did nothing actually is what pissed her off. Because Japan does have this whole thing where you're supposed to go, like, greet your neighbors when you move in and try to form a positive social relationship, that kind of stuff. That's baked into society here. We've had a couple people show up to our house and they give us, like, traditionally, it's like literally cleaning products. It's laundry detergent or dish soap or something like that. And they give that and they say, like, we've moved into the neighborhood. You know, if we have any trouble, can we rely on you? Can we be friends? Like that. You never actually see them again after that. Like, I had this happen maybe 2 months ago. This very nice couple and their kid showed up. And I said hello to the kid. And they were like, ooh, foreign person living in our area. And they gave us the thing. They said, we're moving in around this area. Spoke Japanese too quickly. I didn't actually catch where they lived. I haven't seen them since. But if I do ever see them, I do have a positive feeling from that first interaction. So I actually think there is a benefit to doing this Japanese traditional thing of showing up at someone else's house and being like, I moved in the area. Hope we can have a good relationship. Maybe she didn't do that. Maybe she did something that she's not admitting. But clearly the person she's dealing with, again, just going through the volume of eggs that she went through, is just lost her sense of reality. So this is her second arrest. I am going to see if I can follow up and find out what the punishment is, because this house is littered in eggshells and the smell is horrendous. I didn't actually smell it, but there were multiple reports. The woman says it always smells like eggs. The reporter said, as you could smell it from here. They talked about how, like, from the area smells like eggs. So she's, like, negatively impacting houses that aren't essentially part of this conflict because she's decided to use, like, a smell attack. Smell attacks are, of course, some of the worst attacks you can use. I haven't done panty thief stories in a long time because panty thief stories, they get repetitive. I mean, there's only so many creative ways people can steal panties. And sometimes I would do one because the sheer volume of panties they found when the police went to the guy's house was astonishing. So it was like a lifetime career's worth of panties found in this dude's house. Like, I remember, like, 4,000, 5,000, like thousands and thousands of things these guys have stolen. There were two stories though this week. So it seemed like we've hit the end of the break. This is when the panty thieves kind of, like, make their shot. They go out there and they do their thing. So there was a police officer and he was caught climbing over a balcony to steal the panties that were hanging out to dry. He said, I stole them. I apologize to the victim and the other police officers because, of course, their reputation has been damaged by my behavior. Then we get a standard police statement. And it's a standard apology. I've actually read it easily a dozen times on Ninja News Japan. It's regrettable. They say that every time. They apologize. And then they get to this line. We will thoroughly instruct and educate our officers to prevent this from happening again. And I find that when you're talking about cops, do you need to educate them in the fact that you should not steal stuff from people's balconies? Like, let's ignore even the panty bit, the sort of, like, weird pervy aspect of this. Should you need to educate police more thoroughly on not stealing stuff from people? I think that's already baked in there. So it's not an education issue. This is a hiring issue. You've hired a guy who's pervy in some way. Now, there's no way to really suss that out. So I don't actually hold this against the police force at large. I wouldn't hold it against this prefectural police force or this town's police force because they hired a guy. And I like to steal women's underwear is something you could very easily hide by just not talking about it. And this is what you should do if you're a good criminal. don't talk about it. We've had a dozen stories where it was like they filmed it and put it on social media. They talked about it to everyone they knew. That's how they got caught. That is something you can prevent, at least not make it easier for the police to catch you. So this guy, I'm assuming, knew, I'm a cop, I shouldn't tell my coworkers that I stole 70 pairs of panties last week or something like that. Then we get on to our second story. August 2nd, 8 p.m., he broke into an apartment to take a woman's underwear, go into the closet, sort of like make a little nook, and sniff them. This guy was a former ballet dancer. I wouldn't go ahead and say famous, but successful in the dance world, had worked overseas in America in multiple productions as a dancer, productions of things I'd heard of, because I mean, they did Fist in the North Star. He was in that. Okay, and this is the pretty privileged psychology issue. When I saw a picture of him, I'm like, this is a good looking dude. Why does he need to do this? Like, he's good looking. If he's a ballet dancer, he's fit. All he has to do is get a girlfriend and then, yeah, you know, get someone who would be find it acceptable for him to sniff her panties, whatever. Like, make it part of your relationship. But then we get deeper into it, and this makes more sense to me now as to why he felt he had to break into a house. I wanted to feel a strong sense of tension by sneaking into someone's home. So for him, the pervy aspect wasn't enough. Like, just having women's underwear that he could deal with, that wasn't enough for him. He needed the extra tension, the danger of breaking into someone's house and then doing this perverted act in their house is what actually was exciting to him. So it wasn't even, I bet, the panties or the stealing. It was the breaking in and being somewhere he wasn't supposed to be. And the chance that he could get caught was a big part of it. So he broke in, he got into the closet, he started sniffing away. The couple came home. And of course, he bolted. They didn't say if he ran out the front door or out back over the balcony or the window or the way he came in. Does it say how he came in? No, it just says he broke in. I'm assuming he came in through a window. I don't know why I assume that. But I'm pretty sure he didn't. I guess he didn't come in through the front door. He probably didn't like jimmy the lock. That would have been noticeable to the couple when they came home. So he ran. They chased him. He gets caught. Turns out this is not his first arrest, and it turns out he's very serious about this practice. In his first arrest, he was using night vision goggles. So this is a guy who's dead serious about this. He's like, I'm going to get equipment that I can use to better break into people's houses, break into their house, and then do this perverted act. But I want the real tension of actually doing it in someone's house. That's the bit that actually makes it exciting for me. A man had had some cocktails back in 2015. We have to go back to the original. This is when the actual story happens, and now we've had lawsuits, and the lawsuits have basically just finished up. So I do like when the story has a finish, like an actual conclusion. The stories are exciting, but the conclusion is also, to me, a very big part of it. Like, are they successful? Do they win? Do they lose? That becomes part of the story for me. You have a guy, he's had some drinks. So already, you know, this story's going a really good way if it starts out with he was drinking. And he's like, ah, you know what? Let's go into the haunted house in this little park thing over here. You know, the haunted houses they're exciting. They're fun. I'm drunk. It'll be more visceral for me. Maybe I'll have more. It'll have more of an impact. It'll be more fun. Let's do that. So he goes in and he's holding his partner's hand going forward. And then a actor jumps out dressed as a ghost. Now, I did not mention at the beginning of this story that this man was a fairly high level karate practitioner. So when a ghost jumped out at him, he did a kick and he kicked the actor in the jaw and broke it. So this actor, probably like a teenager, dressed up as a ghost, doing like a summer job, jumps out to scare a guy like he's done a million times before. Everyone has a good laugh, ha ha ha, and then they move on. In this case, he jumps out, goes to scare the guy, gets kicked in the face, and his jaw gets broken. Then there's a lawsuit. And the lawsuit is this karate guy needs to pay the actor for the damages done, 10 million yen. He accepts that. Then he launches a counter lawsuit. And the karate guy says that the management company is also partially responsible. Now, there are 4 points in the lawsuit as to how the company that runs this haunted house is actually responsible for the results of this situation. Number one, there was no barrier between the ghost and the customer. Now, The jumping out aspect of it usually means there's no barrier because they're kind of hiding around a corner. They jump out. That's the scary bit. They get very close to you. That's also part of the scare. I think that is on purpose. And therefore, I personally, okay, let's pretend I'm the judge. I think that's an unreasonable expectation. This has also gone on for years and years and years. The actors, I bet, are not allowed to actually touch you. They jump out and they go, or they do something right in your face, but they don't touch you. There's kind of like an unwritten rule probably for all these places where you're not touching the actual customers or guests. Number two, the park failed to train employees to avoid attacks. That seems like an unreasonable expectation. So, hey, high school kids who are going to do a summer job for me, we're going to have to do a 2-week training camp to avoid high kicks to the face because there is the off chance that a single drunk individual also practices karate and boots you in the face while you're doing your job here at minimum wage. If this went through, this would actually imply that every company where someone interacts with the public in some way needs to train them in some form of self-defense, which might actually not be a bad thing. But in this case, what he's saying is your staff need to be prepared to stop or avoid attacks of patrons, which again, I think is quite unreasonable. Number three, the park did not inform customers that real people were inside. I don't know if you have to do that. Because the whole point is where you're going to go in, you don't know what's going on. It's supposed to be scary. It's supposed to be a surprise. So you, if you're told everything that's going to happen, then you're taking away the scare part. And now you're actually like messing up the whole ride. I see the logic there. Like there's real people in there. But if a machine jumped out at you and you kicked to the machine and you broke the machine, I think you'd still be responsible to pay for the machine, the breakage or the damage you did to the machine. This is just more serious because it's an actual human being that you've booted in the face. Number four, the park should have stopped a drunk man. I actually vaguely agree with this, that when drunk people want to do things, they often don't make good decisions because they're drunk. But at the same time, how drunk was he? Like, was it noticeable? Was the fact that he was drinking like an issue? But also, I think drunk people are more likely to go on haunted houses because it'll be more fun for them. So I actually would say that being drunk is might even be part of the attraction of the haunted house. So I flip-flop. The first three I'm saying no, but this one I kind of flip-flop on because I think it should be up to the management's discretion. I think if they say you're too drunk, you shouldn't be go in here, I think that should be allowed. But they're also in a situation where it's like, well, am I going to refuse every drunk person's money? Because then I might not make any money. The karate guy asked the park to pay 4.8 million yen of the 10 million yen that he was supposed to pay. That was thrown out. Then he came back to a higher level court. So this guy, you know, he's showing the karate spirit. He's not giving up. And he's now trying to get the park to pay 7 million of the 10 million yen. And of course, it was also thrown out because he didn't really have anything new to add. He didn't have any sort of better justifications than the ones I just read you. But we did get the court's ruling. The court's ruling was, it is the aim to surprise customers. So the whole point of a haunted house is to surprise people. I've actually gone into haunted houses a few times. I would say they were pretty low-key, cheap ones. You stepped on a panel, and when you stepped on the panel, it was basically a giant button, and then a thing going, bah-ha! And then came out at your face. I was with my girlfriend at the time, and she would scream every time, and I would go like, I had no surprise reaction because it wasn't surprising enough. I think an actor in a ghost costume probably would have got a reaction out of me. But the fact that I could feel I would take a step and it would go ka-chunk and then something happened, I just was like, okay, I'm actually going to, you know, make fun of my girlfriend at the time. And I'm going to tell her, okay, oh, something's happening. And then it happens. And she thought I was psychic. But it's because she was walking slightly behind me. So I could feel the big buttons on the floor and she couldn't. She was also just way more into it. I'm also not really fun at, you know, amusement parks and stuff. I ride roller coasters and my facial expression does not change and I do not scream. I have a good time. I enjoy it. I just sit there and I enjoy the feeling and I go on the ride. But a lot of people like say it's actually not fun because I don't react to the stuff you're supposed to react to. It is done on the principle that the haunted house is safe. So yeah, if a haunted house was actually dangerous, it wouldn't be open to the public. So the fact that the public's allowed to go in there means there's an understanding that it's a safe environment, that you're not going to get hurt, that nothing's actually going to happen. Yes, they're going to surprise you and scare you, but nothing bad's going to happen. Therefore, it is unreasonable for you to react as if something like this is actually going to happen to you. It's unrealistic. I've lost the sentence. It's unrealistic for your reaction to be as if something were real and something was actually going to hurt you. So you don't need to defend yourself, I think is what the judge is saying. It is difficult to find a justifiable rationale for the action of kicking a minimum wage, probably teenager or university student actor in the face and breaking his jaw. And I think that is a very good judgment.